Record on this computer. And we are recording, as far as I can tell. A couple more things we have to wait for. Welcome. Just to let you know that our webinars are not just going to be on Thursday. We also have one next Monday on the 5th. And that will be the third session. You do not want to miss that one. That's like the coolest thing I do. Aside from what we're doing tonight, of course. So we have two more after this, Monday, and then also next Thursday to complete the series. Hopefully you can attend them live. If you're listening to the recording, that's fine too, but it's better if you can attend live and if you can raise your hand and actually volunteer yourself to be in the hot seat, because being in the hot seat is the best part of these webinars. So please volunteer to be in the hot seat. So a couple things right now as we're getting started. First of all, I would like you to grab a pen and paper. And I would also like you to raise your hand if you do want to be in the hot seat tonight. And I need probably three volunteers. And just going over my list of volunteers, you know, make sure that you're in a quiet place with no background noise. Hopefully you'll be in an open, empty, upright cup. If you remember from our first botched webinar where I talked about the analogy of showing up at these webinars four different ways, cup upside down, right side up cup, but there's a hole in the bottom of the cup, mud and dirt in the cup, or an open, empty, upright cup. So if you want to be involved, volunteer, best if you're an open, empty, upright cup and you're ready to learn something new. As you volunteer, just raise your hand in chat, say your name, and that's the first step. And then once approved, you then have to unmute yourself when we ask you to sit in the hot seat. The other thing to remember is that questions and answers can be in the box that's below that says Q&A. At any time, as I am facilitating you or you're watching this experience live, you can submit a question and I will periodically check in with the questions and answers box and answer your questions. So let's get started. Now, hopefully everybody has a pen and paper by now. And if you don't, scramble to find one. And what I want you to do, I'm going to kind of do something that I should have done last week, which is introduce myself a little bit more. Many of you know my background. Maybe you don't. I thought maybe it would be a good time to insert that and also talk about why you should listen to me about the subject of fear. But while I'm doing this introduction, though, I want you to write a letter to fear with this pen and paper. What it looks like, though, is I want you to personify fear. I love to personify fear. I want you to see it as a child or a spouse or a roommate or an employee in your corporation, especially employee in the corporation, because that's how we honor our game that we play, Shift the Game of 10,000 Wisdoms. So personify it. So when you write a letter to fear, I want it to look like this, like, dear fear, I can't stand you. You know, refer to fear as a you, not as an it. Whenever you show up, I'm embarrassed when you're around. I want nothing to do with you. I'm actually attending these webinars to try and win the war against you. You are the worst thing that ever happened to me. Whatever you want to write. So start that now. And while you're writing this letter to fear, and I'm going to have my volunteers right now, we have Mark and Eric. I'm hoping to get at least one more. So put your name down in chat. So certainly Mark and Eric, start writing your letter to fear because I'm going to have you read it out loud. So let me introduce myself. Kristen Ulmer, I'm sure you all know that. My background is about age 20, I became a professional athlete, an extreme athlete. And I was recognized as being the best woman big mountain extreme skier in the world for 12 years. I was also voted by the outdoor industry to be the most fearless woman athlete in North America. Now, I believe my hype. I actually didn't feel fear. I felt fearless. And it's taken me a long time to realize and a lot of self-reflection on those days back in my 20s and early 30s that actually I wasn't fearless, that fear was with me every single moment of every single day in every single interaction I had. And I repressed it, though. I repressed it to the extreme. I did what we're all taught to do, which is try to conquer, overcome, let go of fear. I just was really, really good at it. And that's how I was able to ski the way I was able to ski. But there were consequences for having done that. So I got to the end of my ski career and I had to quit. I was so burnt out. I had PTSD, adrenal fatigue. I hated skiing. Like, those were the consequences of repressing fear. And so then I met a Zen master and I started studying Zen and I started trying to heal myself, resolve my problems. And I found out that the repression of fear was the reason for my problems. So now I did some things right by fear during my ski career, and I did some things wrong by fear. I then became a mindset sports coach and I helped people with their fear and just their underperforming issues in sports. And then my ski campers and my sports campers wound up hiring me to be their Zen therapist for subjects unrelated to sports as well, until about 95% of my practice of what I, you know, teach or how I worked was with clients unrelated to sports after a while. Finally, I just realized that almost every issue that I encountered, it didn't matter if it was underperforming, insomnia, just kind of a general sense of unease in our kind of undercurrent, depression, panic attacks, anxiety disorders, and on and on and on. If we addressed our relationship with fear, then either those problems would partially resolve or completely resolve. So then I finally said, this is ridiculous, especially with my background. I mean, I have 30 years of real world in the dirt experience of what to do about fear and what not to do about fear. And, you know, my competition, I guess, really are scientists, doctors, psychologists, and, you know, they're just theorizing on basically stuff they learned in college or they're studying in a laboratory. And I'll tell you what, you know, knowing that under a fearful situation, your amygdala turns purple on a computer screen, you know, that information actually doesn't help us feel more calm when we're giving a speech or when we're skiing, or feel less anxiety or monkey mind in the middle of the night. So what I teach does. And so you've come to the right place. I guess there's not that many fear specialists in the world. I have a really hard time finding others, mostly because I think that people think if they're going to be a fear specialist, they have to A, be fearless, and B, somehow teach people how to be fearless or how to completely get rid of anxiety. And not only is that not possible, but it's actually undesirable. So I hope I've given you enough time to write your letter to fear. And if you're new and joining us, what I'm having everybody do is get out a pen and paper, write a letter to fear as if fear is an individual in your life. So you call it a you, like, you know, you are holding me back from starting my business. You're holding me back from being the person I want to be. Like, these are some of the things that you can write in your letter. So now I guess we have a few more volunteers. We have Eric, Teresa, Rob, Mark, whoever is ready to read their letter of those four people that I just mentioned, why don't you come online right now and let me hear what you got. Okay, Eric, so what you need to do is unmute yourself, and why don't you read to us your letter to fear?
Okay, can you hear me?
I can.
Isn't technology wonderful?
It is.
All right.
So, when it works.
When it works.
Yeah.
So dear fear, you're holding me back in so many areas of my life. As a skier, a ski patroller, a manager of people, and a father. You get in my head, you keep me from achieving my goals. I feel embarrassed, ashamed, let down, and weak when you interfere in my life. I'm attending this seminar to learn how to not allow you to keep invading and holding up my life. That's all I got. That's okay. All I can go.
Very interesting. Now, imagine that that letter were written to you from your roommate. Now, read it again to yourself. You know, like, hey, Eric, you're holding me back. Because of you, I'm embarrassed. You are a source of weakness. I'm attending this webinar to learn how to get you out of my life. And, you know, you don't necessarily have to read the whole thing out loud, but can you see that however you talk to fear, however you wrote that letter to fear, you're actually writing that letter to yourself? It's like, If you are embarrassed when fear is around, you're embarrassed about yourself. If you hate fear, you hate yourself. If you're looking to get rid of fear, it's like, it's almost like you're looking to get rid of your connection to your very life. So however we treat fear, we treat ourselves. And so I'm going to start with you. And eventually, Teresa, Rob, Mark, I don't know if I'll get to you, Mark, but I'm going to have you read your letters too. But I'm just going to start with you, Eric, and I'm going to facilitate the voice of fear next and see how it feels that you've just written this letter to it, and how it makes that voice, that part of you, that roommate, that child feel. You ready to go?
Let's give it a whirl.
All right. So if you remember from our game, so fear is an employee in your corporation, or fear is a child in your life. I like to personify it. So whatever reality is sitting here right now, I want you to move aside the reality that needs to understand or is trying to make sense of this game and just kind of step out of your own way. Like, you're not going to be Eric anymore. The voice of fear is actually going to borrow your body, your mouth, your brain in order to speak on its behalf. And so allow me, please, to speak to the voice of fear. Who am I speaking to?
Okay, here I am.
And who am I speaking to? And once you say who you are, you're there. So say, I'm the voice of fear.
I'm the voice of fear.
Okay. And your job in this corporation is to be afraid, right?
Yeah.
So tell me some of the things that you're afraid of. Now, before you answer that, though, I want you to notice that you're the voice of fear, right? You're not Eric. Eric is not you. It's your job to be afraid, not Eric's. So what are you afraid of?
Me is fear. What am I afraid of? Mm-hmm. Maybe control. Fear of losing. Fear of failure.
Fear of losing control. That's interesting. Yep. Fear of failure, of course, is a big one.
Yeah.
And we spoke to the controller last week.
Yep.
And your fear is maybe of the controller losing control, but the controller is also trying to control you. And so notice if maybe some of those are just kind of titles or borrowed answers. Like, what really are you afraid of? Like, let's get down and dirty here.
As fear, what am I afraid of?
Possible.
I think it boils down to failing whatever I'm trying to do or what I'm trying to control.
Right.
So I think that's it.
Right. And it's interesting. Our thinking mind is now getting involved. So notice if you're the one who's thinking about what fear is afraid of, you know, is that who you are? Are you the one that's thinking about fear? Or are you the one that's trying to understand what you're afraid of?
It's the latter, I think, is, you know, why is this bothering you? Why is it affecting you? How can you control it and fix it?
All right, let me help you, because I don't think you're in voice. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's trying to understand what's the deal with fear. Who am I speaking to?
My thinking mind.
Exactly. But when I say this specific voice, because this voice I just asked to speak to, the one who's trying to understand what you think about fear, slightly different from the thinking mind. You know, it's in the same genre, same department, right? But allow me, please, to speak to the voice of now preconceived notions about fear. Who am I speaking to?
Preconceived notions might be the judge.
Well, hold on. We don't want to give you another name. I don't want to say, hey, Gladys, can I speak to you? And Gladys says, oh, yeah, I may be Alice, right? Like, be very specific. We want to move one kind of notch at a time. So when I say, allow me, please, to speak to the voice of preconceived notions about fear, then just allow me to speak to that voice and not some sort of kind of redirected version of that.
Sure. Okay.
It's as simple as possible, right?
Yep.
And I can tell that you're a super smart guy, and so you're in your head with this game that we're playing. I'm trying to simplify it down, so allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's trying to understand. Who am I speaking to?
the one who's trying to understand.
Right. Are you the voice of fear?
I am.
No, you're the one who's trying to understand fear. There's a difference. You get it?
Yep.
So allow me please to speak to the voice of preconceived notions about what fear is. So move another notch. Who am I speaking to?
Just preconceived notions of fear.
Right. Are you the voice of fear?
No, I don't think so.
No.
No.
Right? Like, let's say I had a neighbor named Gladys. And if I have preconceived notions about who Gladys is, I'm not really going to capture Gladys, you know? So Right. It's just you projecting and thinking and trying to make sense of Gladys, or in this case, fear. Like, I'm not going for you. I don't want to speak to you, okay? Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's trying to understand what fear is. Who am I speaking to?
Thinking mind.
Well, call yourself the one who's trying to understand.
The one who's trying to understand fear.
Right. It's just slightly different from the thinking mind.
Yep.
So you're the one who's trying to understand fear. Are you the voice of fear?
No.
No. Okay, so now that we got these voices out of the way, it's like they're like, ooh, pick me. I wanna talk, right? I don't wanna talk to any of these voices. And here's the thing, if nobody ever lets the voice of fear speak on its behalf, like we're always trying to understand fear, we're always trying to rationalize away fear, we're always trying to control fear. It's like there's all this hubbub on the surface just speaking on the behalf of fear. We never actually get to listen to our fear. And so this is a gorgeous, amazing opportunity to get all these other voices out of the way so that I can speak to fear. You ready?
Let's try it.
All right. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's trying to give me access to the voice of fear.
The one who's trying to give you access to fear.
Right. You just said the magic word, trying, right?
Yeah.
Yoda says do or do not do. There is no try. Are you the voice of fear?
No.
No. All right. Now, we also got you out of the way. Finally, allow me, please, to speak to the voice. And we're getting rid of all the riffraff. Allow me, please, to speak the voice of fear. Who am I speaking to?
This is fear.
Okay. You're not trying to understand what you are, as if you could. You're not preconceived notions. You're not trying to be the voice of fear. You're the voice of fear. You're very simple. Your job is to be afraid. What are you afraid of?
I'm afraid of getting hurt. I'm afraid of heights. I'm afraid of failure.
And if you want to go even deeper into what you are, I'm afraid of Eric getting hurt. I'm afraid of Eric failing. You get it?
Yep.
Because you're not Eric and Eric is not you. How does he feel about you? And he just read me a letter actually telling me how he feels about you. It was kind of harsh. So you heard it too. You were listening. What is your reaction to how he sees you, how he treats you, how he feels about you?
He despises you.
Despises me.
You, or fear, right?
Yeah. Well, hold on. Don't refer to yourself
Eric
as a third
despises
person.
Fear.
Right. He despises me.
Yep.
Right? So you're an I. You're an individual. You're not an it. You're not a thing. Okay? You're fear. And I'm here. I'm your best friend, right? I'm giving you a stage by which to express yourself, to talk without all these others interrupting. So he despises you. As the voice of fear, are you locked in the basement? He wants nothing to do with you. Is that what's going on?
Sometimes. I think he allows me out to, I can control too much as fear.
So it sounds to me, like even that language, sometimes he allows me out. It sounds to me like there's a very controlling relationship between you and him. Like it's up to him whether or not you get out of the basement or not. You know, it's, let's do this. Allow me please to speak to the voice of you locked in the basement. Who am I speaking to? And here's where you say, I'm fear, I'm locked in the basement.
I'm fear and I'm locked in the basement.
Right. So you're still the voice of fear, but now you're kind of looking around and you realize you're down here in the dark with no food, no water, no love, no sunshine. And he has this comment like, well, sometimes I'll let you out. Like that's his attitude towards you. Like if you're good and if you don't cause too many problems, I might just let you out in the fresh air and sunshine. Is that kind of the relationship that you have with Eric?
Yes.
So how does that make you feel? And keep in mind, your job is to be afraid. Your job is not to feel love or joy. Your job is to be afraid. Does that make you feel, well, I won't put any ideas in your head. How do you feel physically?
It makes me feel like I can't do my job.
Yeah, exactly. How do you feel emotionally? Because you are an emotion.
Irritated.
Okay. Irritated at him, at the world.
That he's not allowing me to do my job.
Yeah. You have a job to do. What else do you feel?
That I could help him, but he gets in the way sometimes.
How does he get in the way?
Because he tries to control me. And then he usually gets pissed when he can't. And so either way, it doesn't work out very well in me helping him understand that there's fear, that I'm here and I could help him.
Right. He tries to control you. And that's actually the controller. We talked to the controller last week. The controller tries to control you. And everybody has a different style. Some people avoid you. You know, some people ignore you. Some people fight you. Some people use their intellect to try and rationalize you away. Like there's all this commotion around you. Are you so bad?
Guess not. It's healthy to have fear. So I don't think I'm that bad. No.
Right. I'm here to be a healthy part of this corporation, a healthy employee. A healthy part of this family. But, you know, did he sign up for these webinars to learn new tricks or tools to kind of keep you locked in the basement or control you or keep, you know, duct tape over your mouth? You know, I don't know. Why did he sign up for this course? It's kind of all about you. This whole course is centered around you. You know, what does he want with regard to you?
Wants to learn how to use it. Use me. Not necessarily control me, but to have a healthy existence with me.
And even the term use me, you know, can be perceived as a little offensive, especially if you've been repressed, you know, like nobody wants to be used by somebody else. So, you know, we can even go for possibly better language than that, but I'm kind of like projecting into the future here. Let's just start with where we are first. You guys have a relationship. It's a strained relationship. He locks you in the basement. The controller lets you out sometimes. You're down here in the basement. Do you feel more afraid or less afraid being locked here in the basement?
More, because I'm not able to do my job.
Yeah, exactly. There's a payoff for locking you in the basement, though, for not dealing with you, for pushing you down. What is his payoff for keeping you down here? Look at him. What do you see?
Well, he gets through tough times where he perceives me to be slowing him down or to prohibit him from doing what he wants to do. So I'm in the way, and by locking me away, he can get on with whatever he's after.
Right. He doesn't have to deal with you temporarily, you know? He's just can live his life on the surface. Is it a lot of effort to keep you down here?
It's a full-time job, I think. It's a lot.
I'm going to quickly move over to Q&A and just see if there's any questions. And it doesn't look like we have any. No. Okay. Well, thank you. It's been wonderful talking to you. I'm going to speak to another person, you know, another voice of fear, and let's get Teresa on board. And Teresa, why don't you unmute yourself? Eric, kind of stick around. We may speak to you again. Of course, you're not Eric anymore. You're the voice of fear.
Got it.
So Teresa, allow me please to speak to the voice of fear. Let's just start with just fear in general. Who am I speaking to?
Fear.
Right. So you're not in the basement. I'm just speaking to you. We've worked together before. I've talked to you before. You're the voice of fear. Are you locked in the basement too? Or what's her relationship with you?
I'm not locked in the basement as much as I used to be. You know, Teresa's been a lot kinder to me recently, and lets me speak and has listened to me a bit more.
Okay. So what is her relationship with you besides she lets you speak, listens to you some more? She knows about my Art of Fear method. Does she spend some time feeling you? Like, you're still on these webinars, so there's still some room for improvement between you and her. Just tell me what else you see as the voice of fear.
She does spend some time feeling me recently. Many times it's when she's in a situation where I'm speaking up and I want her to pay attention. Not just in the day to day, but she's definitely paying attention to me when I'm showing up and not just trying to push me away. She's spending a little time there.
There's some really high-pitched screechy noise. I don't know if there's anything you can do about that, but anyway. I found that if people choose to put themselves in a risky situation such that you show up as the voice of fear, then you're easier to stomach. It's like, okay, I'm skiing a little bit too fast, or I'm going on a first date or something like that. And I'm consciously choosing, like Teresa's consciously choosing to do something where you're going to show up, then it's probably easier to deal with you. But when she's in a situation where she didn't consciously choose you, you know, maybe she's getting mugged, or maybe all of a sudden she just wound up in over her head in something, you know, or she's giving a speech and it's just going south, right? You're going to show up, and then there's a little bit more strain, actually maybe even a lot more strain, because she didn't consciously choose you. You just showed up.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what is the history that Teresa has with you?
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I do hear that sound and I'm not sure how to get rid of it. For a long time, she's really tried to get rid of me, really pushed me in the basement. She's seen me very present in the life of her mother.
By the way, if you put on a headset, that might get rid of the sound.
Let me see if that's an option. Hold on. It's very bizarre. Do you want to shift to someone else while I see if I can?
Okay, let's do that. Because it's pretty piercing. If we were dogs, we'd all be like, you know, hiding our heads under the blanket. So.
Okay.
Why don't we go with Rob? Or hold on, we have Steve. Rob? Okay, let's go with Rob.
How's that?
So, hi, Rob. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of fear.
Okay, you're talking to fear.
All right. Your job is to be afraid. How does Rob feel
That's
about
correct.
You?
Well, Rob is getting increasingly frustrated as he gets older, because I get more of a chance to interfere with new projects that he takes on, and also to restrict him in areas that previously when he was much younger, he was more confident in, and I didn't get any anywhere near as much opportunity to restrict him or hold him back in any in these areas. Rob used to be many people regarded as a risk taker in business, in life, in sport, in a whole heap of areas. And but I managed to almost, in my words, that's Fear's words, bring him under control as he's got into his 70th decade.
Is your intention to hold him back, destroy his life, prevent him from fulfilling his dreams, or has something gone wrong?
No, I don't. I think he's just got to be, he's got to understand that life can't, doesn't keep going up, you get to a stage where it starts to become a downward slide, and he's very, very reluctant to admit that.
So you're trying to get his attention, you're trying to slow him down, contain him. Would you read the letter that he wrote to you, please? The letter he wrote to you.
Yeah.
And I want you to react to this letter. Okay?
Okay, I'm attending this webinar to get rid of you, particularly when I'm snowboarding at Whistler. That part where the snow gets hard, icy, and everyone is passing me on the way down to the lift. Fear, you're holding me back in my snowboarding fun. When I come to a steeper, icy bit, I hear the scraping, scratching, and you make me get a quick sweat and freeze, tighten my muscles, and I can feel you in my gut. That's as far as I got. That's as far as I got in the letter. So, but there's, if I had more time, I would have continued the letter. You appear in other parts of my life
So I'm not so much interested in the story,
okay,
like of when you show up, but just how he feels about you when you do show up. And I think that we have enough, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And it tells me that he's blaming you for his holdbacks. He's blaming you for that, you know, moments when he wants to ride a little bit faster, do a little bit more with his life, and you're the culprit that's holding him back.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. He is blaming me.
Right. So would you say that he doesn't like you, he wants to get rid of you, maybe he signed up for this webinar series to get rid of you? Is that his kind of approach to you, or his way of seeing you?
Absolutely.
Then allow me, please, to speak to the voice of you, Fear, also locked in the basement. So
okay,
who am I speaking to? And here's where you say, I'm Fear, locked in the basement.
This is me, Fear, and I'm locked in the basement.
Okay. No food, no water, no love. Like, he can't stand you. And actually, I don't know if you guys can see this above, it's a little glary, but suffering equals discomfort times resistance. I just kind of want to introduce that equation, which I did last week. It's in my book, but we're now exploring you, the discomfort. You're a very uncomfortable feeling. It's your job to be afraid. You make him uncomfortable. You're a feeling in the body of discomfort. So all humans have a long history of avoiding anything unpleasant. You're unpleasant. He locks you in the basement. We're all taught to do it. fight you, conquer you, put you out of their minds, right? Control you. So here you are, locked in the basement. And, you know, imagine if you really were a child locked in the basement. How do you feel?
Well, I, you know, I'm, it's cold in the basement. It's dark in the basement.
How do you feel physically?
I'm sitting all scrunched up. You know, I'm not standing tall with my chest out. You know, full of pride, I'm all scrunched over, feeling you know, a bit worthless and yeah, unloved, and you know, the fact of the matter is I've got a place in Rob's life, and he's just not recognizing that.
Right. Immediately we can see what the problem is that Rob, that Eric, that, you know, probably everyone in this webinar is not allowing you your rightful place in their lives. And, you know, the resistance has actually been learned. You know, you're an innate, normal, natural part of life, but somewhere along the path, you know, the self, Rob, was given some sort of message that we need to fight you and overcome you, conquer you, put you in the basement. And, you know, we're now on a kind of nationwide hate campaign against you. You know, almost all 7.5 billion of us are putting you in the basement. And if we can't successfully control you and keep you down there, we'll medicate you away and so that you can't even feel yourself. And so here's a really important point. Whatever you feel physically as the voice of fear locked in the basement, the self feels. Like if you feel kind of scrunched up and small, the self will feel that way because you're such a huge part of who he is. So if he's embarrassed by you, he's actually embarrassed by himself. If he hates you, he actually hates himself. If you feel constricted and tight, so too will he. If you feel sad by being in the basement, so too will the self. If you feel angry, you know, by being put down here, because the emotions are all kind of connected, sadness, anger, like he may rather feel anger than you because it feels more powerful. It's like a coping mechanism to keep you in the basement. Like he has to feel something, so he's going to feel anger rather than you. It's like all this kind of compensation that goes on to try and not deal with you. So let's go through a couple of scenarios of how the self treats you. We're going to come back to talk to you. We're not going to leave you in the basement. I'm your best friend. I'm like the PR director for you. I promise we'll take you out of the basement before this session is up. But let's go on a little bit of a journey to explore all the many ways in which humanity finds to not deal with you. So this is going to be kind of rapid fire. You ready?
Yep.
All right. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who avoids fear. Who am I speaking to?
You're talking to the one who avoids fear.
All right. What are some of the things that you do to avoid fear?
I'm the one who avoids fear. Okay.
You want me to make it easy for you?
Can I have a try first?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. I get really grumpy with myself. I sit down in the snow and say, Rob, you can do better than this. Now center yourself, take 3 or 4 deep breaths and get up and get going and make a real bird out of this.
Mm-hmm. So that might be the one who ignores fear. Like we're going to kind of go through a bunch of voices really quickly. So allow me please to speak to the voice of the one who ignores fear.
Who ignores.
Mm-hmm. Who am I speaking to?
you're speaking to the voice of one who ignores fear.
And I want all of these voices to be embodied. Like, I don't want us to try and understand them. I just want them you to feel what it feels like to be ignoring fear. Like, we were just speaking to fear, you know, fear is still listening. Yep. And it's like, here it is, right? And we're ignoring it. Like, okay, you can do this. 3 deep breaths. Like, I'm just going to, like, put you out of my mind. You see what I'm saying?
Okay, so I'm the voice of the one who ignores fear. Right, on the count of three, we're out of here.
Right, exactly.
And we're just going to do it. Yeah.
Right. So it's like this whining child, you know, like, imagine that Rob is a parent, right? And here's this whining child. Yep. And you ignore the whining child, the child goes away. And you're like, well, shoot, that worked. Like, I got to keep doing that. But what do we know about whining children? Well, they come back.
They come back. They're persistent.
Right. They're persistent. And they're whining louder next time, right?
Yep.
And they're staying longer. And it takes a little bit more effort to ignore it, but it still works. They go away. And then they're back, you know, and they're like, come on. And after 5, 10, 20 years of being ignored by dad, you know, that child is now freaking crazy, pathological, screaming, yelling, right? In order to get the attention. And all of a sudden it becomes your whole job to just, like, la, 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 like, not listen to that whining child. So that's you ignoring fear. I just spoke a little bit ago to the one who's avoiding fear. So allow me, please, to speak to the voice, the one who avoids fear. Who am I speaking to?
You're speaking to you're speaking to the one that avoids fear. Is that right? Yep, that avoids fear. So I'm avoiding fear. Yep.
Right. And what that looks like is, I don't do the scary thing. Okay, I'm not going to ski down this steep section.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Right. Yep. I'm going to go around, or I might not ski at all, or I might not date anymore, or I might stay in my day job. You know, and not take the risk.
Yep.
Can you see how you, as the voice of the one who avoids fear, helps Rob avoid fear in his life?
Yes.
Yeah, and if you want to give an example, you can.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, so I've managed to as the voice of the one that avoids fear, Rob no longer surfs big waves because we've fixed him on that.
Right. So you, as the voice of the one who avoids fear, is strong in his life. The one who ignores fear is strong in his life. Like, you guys are on the job. Like, the controller may have kind of put you in charge, avoid, you know, ignore fear. And I want to, let's go back to Teresa too, if we can. And then we're going to go through a few more of them. And hopefully Teresa's.
Okay. Speaking. Hopefully this will be better.
Rob, we may come back to you. I'm not sure.
No worries.
All right. So Teresa, allow me please to speak to the voice of the one who controls fear. Who am I speaking to?
The one who controls fear.
All right. So I'm reminded of a story. These two guys start a religion, Jim and Joe, and they just sit around all day saying, I am humble, I am nothing. I am humble, I am nothing. It's like they're trying to control the reality, just be humble, nothing, you know, servants or whatever. And pretty soon their church just explodes. They have millions of followers. You know, they have this huge ashram. One day their buddy Biff walks by. And he's like, oh, there's that ashram that Jim and Joe started. I got to go check that out. And he goes inside and he sees Jim and Joe, you know, they're old friends, and he waves, and Biff sits down and he starts chanting, I am humble. I am nothing. I am humble. I am nothing. And Jim and Joe, like, look over at Biff and they smack each other. They're like, look who thinks he's nothing. So this story illustrates that we work so hard to kind of control who we are. And we think that we've gotten rid of a voice by that effort. But if you look again, the only thing that we've done is kind of sought to help us dive into our own delusion, right? So you, as the voice of the control, the one who's trying to control fear, tell me how you try to control fear in Teresa's life.
When fear shows up, I just really focus, you know, I guess I just take action immediately and decide if I want fear to be there or not. And if it doesn't seem like a time where fear should be there, then I try to tell fear to go away. And if it seems maybe like it's appropriate, like Teresa's going to do something really dumb, then I'll let fear, you know, kind of speak a little bit louder.
So you're the voice of the controller, basically, but your focus is on fear, right?
Yeah.
And we talked to the controller last week, and there's definitely some belief that if you, the one who controls fear, is, or you're really good at your job, that you're kind of going to give the self the life that they need. But fear is with us every single moment of every single day and every interaction we have. It's a huge job.
It is.
Yeah, and look at all the things that you have to do and how you have to act and walk and talk and be in order to control fear. What's that like for you?
Exhausting, confusing a little bit. Sometimes I'm not sure. Especially if it's a new situation, I don't know if I should, I don't know what I should do with fear in that situation if I'm not familiar with it.
Confusing is a word that I definitely feel strongly about. It's confusing. It's like, it's almost like a three-ring circus. I don't know, okay, yes, fear, no fear, no fear here, you know, fear here. It just there's a thinking mind involved. Like, it's just a three-ring circus.
Mm-hmm.
Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who fights fear. Who am I speaking to?
The one who fights fear.
All right. And you're kind of a big deal. Like, everybody says, well, we have to win this war. The language around fear is so often conquering, overcoming fear. It suggests a battle, right?
Mm-hmm.
How's it going? Is the one who's fighting fear?
Not very well. I feel like I'll bring my best to the table, and you know, fear is a pretty tough competitor.
There was a samurai that lived in the south of Japan, and he was very famous. And there was a Zen master that lived in the north. And the samurai decided one day he was going to relinquish all his earthly possessions, except for his loincloth, his begging bowl, and his sword. And he was going to walk north. It was going to take him 6 months and just live off the kindness of strangers, sleep in the dirt, right? Because it was such a holy quest. He wanted to learn about heaven and hell from the Zen master. So 6 months later, after all this, he gets up there and he gets in front of the Zen master and he said, oh my gosh, I've come so far. I want to learn about heaven and hell. Please teach me about heaven and hell. And the Zen master looked at him and he's like, absolutely not. You stink. You're covered in lice. You're emaciated. You're filthy. I won't teach you anything. You're beneath me. Get out. And the samurai was like, so appalled. And he was a very famous samurai, and he takes his sword out and he's going to cut the head off of the Zen master. And as he's about to do this, the Zen master said, that is hell. And the samurai stops, drops his sword, falls to his knees, and starts kissing the feet of the Zen master. And then the Zen master said, that is heaven. So when we're trying to cut the head off of something, we live in hell. But when we kiss the feet of something, we're living in heaven. So as the voice of the one who's trying to fight fear, I mean, you're like kind of a certain kind of at war with yourself hell. You know, fear is such a huge part of who we are. You know, it's a war that's being carried out in the self's unconscious mind. It's an unwinnable war. And you're going to try and fight this your whole life if you get put in charge of dealing with fear, aren't you?
Yes.
Is there anything that you want to say about how it's been for you as the one who's fighting fear?
I guess my job is to fight fear. I'd hate to think that maybe I'm not necessary and needed, but I am tired, and like you said, it's an everyday struggle and battle.
One way in which we try to fight fear is use our intellect, you know, like a sword. So allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's trying to rationalize away fear. Who am I speaking to?
The one who's trying to rationalize away fear.
What's it like for you?
I love it. I'm a pretty smart person. It gives me an opportunity to just, you know, go through scenarios, and it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. The one thing about this, there's a Zen master that got in front of a monk, and he held up in his hand a rock, and he said to the monk, you know, can you tell me, is this rock of your mind? And the monk said, yes, the rock is of my mind. I'm thinking about the rock. And the master said, well, your head must be very heavy then. So if you're the one who's trying to rationalize away fear, or allow me please to speak to the voice of the one who's trying to understand fear, who am I speaking to?
The one who's trying to understand fear.
Right. So next thing you know, we're in our heads and kind of went there before, trying to understand fear, thinking about fear. It's like, people put the intellect in charge of dealing with this emotion, you know, and we start thinking about fear, our heads become very heavy. Because mm-hmm. fear is a big, big deal. So what's it like for you? As the one who's trying to understand fear.
Busy, and you know, I'm working nonstop. I can't take a break. I don't know that I'm getting anywhere. I don't know, because you know, it's, I think one way, you know, take flying, for example, you know, flying is safe. I know that. It seems, you know, for Teresa, it's, you know, I try to express to her that, you know, she's safe. But there's still, you know, fear just still wants to be there. And so I don't understand why fear keeps coming for these, especially in situations where I don't think it's necessary.
Right. We have a question that's come in, and I'd like to kind of focus on that next, but I just am illustrating the commotion that shows up when fear is around and all these many ways in which we put our intellect, the controller, the one who ignores things, the one who avoids things, the one who fights, you know, discomfort, right? Here we go, the discomfort. We're kind of talking about the resistance right now. You know, all these ways in which we resist fear. Resistance comes in many, many different forms. And so now allow me, please, to speak to the voice of fear locked in the basement. Who am I speaking to?
Fear locked in the basement.
All right. So your fear, you're locked in the basement. People are doing a lot of things to not deal with you, trying to resist you. I know that for Teresa, you're not locked in the basement nearly as much as you used to be. Mm-hmm. But I just want to kind of try this question on and just see what we come up with. The question goes like this. It seems as though fear, you, can be useful or not useful, as the last speaker just identified. So can you see that right there, that's the rational mind, trying to determine whether you're useful or not useful? As the voice of fear, how do you feel about that comment, that they have that judgment on you as being, eh?
Well, I'm not useful. Yeah, I'm always useful. You know, I feel very strongly that I'm always useful. If there's a situation where I shouldn't be afraid, I'm probably not afraid. You know, I'm not showing up or afraid. But if I'm there, there's a reason I'm there.
Okay. So right now, I almost feel like I'm giving you the stage. And I don't want you to feel like you're fighting for your right to party, you know, or fighting for your right to live or be part of this corporation, but kind of that's what's happening. You know, there's just such a belief system around you is, you know, that sometimes you're good, sometimes you're bad. You know, you're just a very simple emotion, just warning the self of danger, a sensation of discomfort in the body. But we've just gotten so in our heads about you and so in turmoil about you, and our relationship has become extremely complicated with you. We judge you as good or bad, rational or irrational. And let's just keep going on with this question. And everybody can see this question in the Q&A if you want. Fear can act as a protective mechanism to keep us from injury. So that's kind of nice, right? Mm-hmm. But there's always a but with you, isn't it? But you can also block one from functioning if you're irrational. So let's dissect that. What causes you to be irrational? Like, why are you so weird and kind of delusional and crazy and even pathological sometimes?
if I'm being ignored, if I, you know, if I feel like, you know, I'm being ignored, then I have to take extreme measures for, you know, for Teresa to listen to me.
Right. And it's like, here we are, suffering equals discomfort times resistance. There's so much resistance towards you. You're locked in the basement, you're being ignored. And down there in the basement, will you be denied?
No.
No. And so you will come out, you know, like here's you, right? Ignore, fighting, rationalizing away, right? Taking out a sword, it's right. Like at this point, you're screaming and yelling and doing whatever it takes to get attention. You'll hijack their mind to get your unfulfilled agenda satisfied. It's like what, like I said last week with the lizard brain, what creature in their right mind would ever repress you? You know, their primary source of protection.
Yeah.
So let me continue with the question. So all day long, the thinking mind makes instantaneous judgments about what's rational and irrational. And so again, we talked about the judge last week, like the thinking mind, the judge, you know, determines whether you're welcomed or whether you're not welcome, whether you're being rational or whether you're being irrational. So in the case that fear may take another trail to avoid injury. But is that bad? I actually say that it's not you that's making them do anything. You're not the one that's making them take another trail. But if they decide that they want to ignore or avoid feeling you, they'll go take another trail. What I'm saying is that it's our reaction to you that is the problem, not you yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to say about that? How does that feel? Does that strike you as supporting you and the role
you play? Yeah, it feels, that feels really nice. It feels like I'm being recognized and appreciated. And I feel afraid in situations and I will, you know, bring that emotion to the table. But again, I'm not ultimately deciding. I'm just trying to help.
Right. I really want all the selves that are listening to really hear what she just said. I'm just trying to help. You have the self's best interest in mind, don't you?
Yes. Yes. I wouldn't be here without Teresa.
Right. Let's go back to Eric. But before I do that, do you have anything else that you'd like to say as the voice of fear?
I just want to be loved a little. maybe not, you know, a lot, but even just a little, just a little bit of something to help me feel better each day.
I asked before one of the other voices of fear, you know, what's the payoff of keeping you in the basement? And, you know, you're just asking for a humble request. Like, I just want to be loved a little. There's a cost of keeping you in the basement. If you feel loved a little, it's almost like the self will then feel a little bit of self-love. And that's definitely a step in the right direction. So that's a beautiful addition to our practice. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm actually going to, hopefully, by the end of these webinars, help the self have a more considerate, caring relationship with you, more loving, not just accepting you, because that's not even, you know, that's maybe one step in the direction we're going. Love is another step. By loving you, like I said, it's self-love, but if the self can even have an intimate relationship with you and even find a way to ultimately enjoy you or really listen to your wisdom, like that's kind of where we're headed. But I like the humbleness of your request, right? Let's move on. Let's get Eric.
Yes.
Allow me please to speak to the voice of fear locked in the basement.
This is fear locked in the basement.
All right. So you've been listening. You know, I'm giving you a stage to speak on your behalf now. And I want to bring in this other question that Richard asked. What do you think about the famous quote by President Franklin Roosevelt, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself"? So You know, the funny thing is, it's your job to be afraid, right? This is a really important moment. You know, it's your job to be afraid. And if you're allowed to do your job, it'll be you who's afraid. And that means that Eric doesn't have to be, nor does the other 9,999 employees in this corporation. Kind of that's what we're going for. And ultimately, it always comes down to, you're the voice of fear. Eric is Eric. You are not Eric. Eric is not you, but he has a relationship with you. And so when I hear like, oh, does Eric fear you? You know, speak to me about that.
I don't think Eric fears me as much as he thinks I'm an irritant. Just slows me down. It slows him down. So okay. There are times.
Now, hold on. You just referred to yourself as an it.
Yeah.
You're not an it. Okay. He feels like I slow him down. He doesn't fear me, but he just finds me like a mosquito, to be like a mosquito.
Yep.
All right. So that's unique to Eric. But whoever asked the question, what may happen is by repressing you, you may ultimately have a self-esteem issue. Like you as the voice of fear, do you even not see your own value, your own worth at this point?
No, I see the value of what I do. There are definitely times when I'm justified mm-hmm. for raising the alarm or being fearful. And that it's helpful to Eric that I am fearful and that I stood up and was recognized.
And I know there's a but here somewhere.
No, there wasn't. There was no but. I think that it's sometimes when I stand up as fear, it's the right thing. I think that
hold on. You keep saying sometimes. That's why I know there's a but in here somewhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, there's never an absolute, I guess. There's...
So imagine I was a child, yeah. Right? And I'm, you know, on national television being interviewed, and I said, oh, well, you know, sometimes I have a right to exist, and other times, you know, I'm just really bad, and, you know, I'm unwelcomed, and I don't have a right to exist, and everybody hates me, and they lock me in the basement, and during those times, and, you know, sometimes they think I'm, you know, welcomed to the dinner table, and other times I'm just absolutely not welcomed, and it's because of me. I'm just a bad, you know, like sometimes I can be really irrational. Like, how would that come across?
Unfair.
Unfair how? Like,
what's unfair to me as fear, because that's my job, is to be to show fear. And right. So I'm just doing my job. So it's unfair that, you know, sometimes I'm accepted. Thank you for, you know, showing me that problem or being concerned about an avalanche. And then other times, you know, not so much, because it was a steep slope and Eric could have skied that.
Kind of a herky jerky relationship, you know,
yes.
And a complicated one and a controlling one. And it's like, is there room for improvement? You know, if Eric was truly a father and you're his child, based on how he sees you, how he treats you, would he win Father of the Year?
No.
Right. We have a Steve Simmons here too. Oh, next is Mark. All right, let's get Mark up. Oh. All right, we're going to get to everybody.
Hello.
So, all right, thank you for everybody that's spoken so far. So Mark, allow me please to speak to the voice of fear in the basement.
Who Hi, am I speaking Kristen. To? This is the voice of fear in the basement.
Okay. How do you feel physically?
Exhausted, angry, and very hungry.
Hungry. Hungry for what?
Hungry for some attention and some discussion and some consultation.
What should we do about you?
I need a hot shower and a good meal and some sunshine and I'm coming upstairs.
And here's the thing, because of our society has such a repressive approach towards you, we judge you, like we see you as good, bad, we abuse you, you lock you in the basement, try to control you, fight you, like there's just all this hubbub. You're just a simple emotion. You're just here to feel fear. Like all this commotion, you know, at this point, you've got to feel pretty crummy. You may even not be aware of your own worth. You may be even afraid of yourself because it's your job to feel fear, right? If you feel afraid of even yourself, of even your own shadow, you know, that's a problem. You're down here in the dark. You have no clear vision. You have no fresh air, you know. Over time, you're going to get agitated, anxious, afraid, angry was your word too. You're going to start acting pathological, irrational, weird, come out, you know, monkey mind in the middle of the night, like you will not be denied. You'll either come out directly as kind of irrational fear or an over extended crazy version of yourself, or you'll come out redirected as something completely different, like depression, anger. The problem actually isn't you. It's the way that we deal with you or don't deal with you or treat you. So let's do this now. Allow me please to speak to the voice of you, fear, 1% out of the basement. Just the door is cracked. You know, mm-hmm. There's a little bit of fresh air coming in. You can see a little bit. You're not in the dark anymore. And I say, who am I speaking to? You say fear 1% out of the basement. Who am I speaking to?
Fear 1% out of the basement.
Okay. How do you feel physically now?
I feel better. I feel as if I'm getting a little, respect and attention for what I bring to the table. Something, you know, a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And whatever you feel, he feels. I feel a little bit better. All of a sudden, he's having some self-respect, mm-hmm. you know, by giving you respect. Like his relationship with you is actually the most important relationship of his life. Because I've said this before, because it's a relationship that he has with himself at his core. You are actually one of the first employees in this entire corporation. So by making friends with you, by giving you love and respect and consideration, he's making friends with himself and giving himself love and respect and consideration. So allow me please to speak to the voice of you, 10% out of the basement. Who am I speaking to?
This is fear 10% out of the basement.
Okay. So the door is really cracked now. You've gone up a couple steps. Yeah. Somebody's left a sandwich for you, mm-hmm. right? A couple right. of grapes. They're not peeled grapes, right?
Right.
How do you feel now?
I'm feeling more human. Feeling a little bit more part of the team that, again, not forgotten about, my voice is being heard, getting a little care, a little attention, and I don't look as crappy.
Okay. Now there's a belief that if you're allowed out of the basement, that you're going to come out like a dragon, you know, seeking mm-hmm. revenge, maybe biting the heads off of his hopes or dreams, that you cannot get out of the basement. And not only that, the self may have very deeply invested in keeping you locked in the basement, has fought some wars with you, has won some wars with you, has managed to control you, to rationalize you away, like has had a tremendous amount of success in keeping you in the basement. And oh my gosh, like this looks really dangerous. What do you have to say about that?
As who? As fear or Mark?
Your fear.
Oh, I want to say as fear that you had me wrong. You know, those feelings you had about what I'm going to do to you now or in the past is not accurate. You know, I don't want to bite your head off, destroy your life, you know, be an irritant to everything good. You know, I want to be next to you in every adventure. That's it. I don't want to hurt you.
Do you have the self's best intention in mind?
Absolutely.
Because there's so much suggestion out there that you don't, that you're some sort of fatal flaw, and that winning the war against you is like what we're supposed to do here in our lifetimes.
Well, that's before we...
Go ahead.
That's before we met you.
Okay. You know, could it be that we got that wrong? And I don't know. I haven't taken you all the way out of the basement yet. I will say at this point, though, one of my favorite stories, and I may have done this our first night when we had a snafu with the internet and our webinar jam, but a man is sitting on a park bench and he looks down and there's a bird there, and he picks up the bird. He's like, no, you're not the bird you're supposed to be. And he takes out a pair of shears and he clips the tail feathers and he clips the wing feathers and he clips off the front inch of the bird's beak and puts the bird back down and says, there, now you're the bird you're supposed to be. And it's kind of a ridiculous story, but I see that that's kind of what humans do with regard to you. They're always trying to change themselves or better themselves. And it's a beautiful effort. But when that kind of changing those attempts, while noble, involve the repression of you or trying to get rid of you or cutting your beak off or trimming your tail feathers or locking you in the basement, then they're kind of not really allowing themselves just to be who and what they are, which is fearful creatures. You know, you're supposed to be with us from start till finish in almost every single moment of every single interaction that we have. It's like, we don't want to believe that that's true. But if we take you out of the basement, you know, is it possible that you won't act so crazy and irrational? You know, there's a pros of putting you in the basement, but there's also cons of putting you in the basement. If we take you out of the basement further, what's going to happen next?
I think you'll realize that I'm not your enemy. I'm your partner.
And it'll be a lot easier on the controller. It'll be a lot easier on the thinking mind or the one who's trying to understand you. Like, we're so busy trying to understand you and we don't ever really get a chance to learn how to feel you. And that's where we're going next. So allow me, please, to speak to the voice of you, fear, 100% out of the basement. Fully welcomed into this corporation, owned and honored, out in the fresh air and sunshine. No, the self's no longer trying to trim you off or change you in any way. Who am I speaking to?
Okay, this is Fear 100%, who he is, out of the basement and upstairs.
Okay. Now look around, fresh air and sunshine, no longer in the dark, you can see clearly. How do you feel?
I feel as if I don't have to look over my shoulder as much. I don't have to double think or quadruple think about certain decisions or moves that I need to make anymore. If I'm accepting this partner as being a full partner, you know, in my life, then he has my back, and I simply got to, you know, with whatever intelligence I've been given, move forward in whatever we're doing. Like, you know, I'm not going to jump off a diving board if there's no water, but the, but the question is, if there is a pool there and I am afraid of the high dive, will I be able to do it now that fear is truly upstairs? And that's going to be a test, Kristen, in 5.5 months.
So just notice that you fell out of voice. You're now speaking as Mark.
Yes. Okay. I noticed that. Okay.
Right. Which is fine. I think that we can all go there. So just allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the self.
Okay.
And who am I speaking to?
The voice of the self.
Yeah, Mark.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
Okay, you're back. But you're not the same Mark that you were, you know, 75 minutes ago. Like, you've now had this experience. We've spoke to the voice of fear. You were able to move out of fear's way and allow fear to use your mouth, your body, your mind in order to represent itself, kind of stand up for itself. Just notice, help you get some insights about how you treat fear and what kind of consequences that has on fear and thus has on yourself. So what did you get out of this?
It's really been, I guess, psychological and kind of, you know, handcuffs of what I had been doing. And the realization of that and the attempt to get stronger to be 100% up is kind of like breaking the slavery, if you will, or the self-imposed limitations, I think.
Right. Thank you. That was really well put. Let me just talk for the next few minutes. And if anybody has any questions, of course, submit them. But especially if somebody didn't have the experience of, oh, how awful it felt when you were fear locked in the basement and how crazy and irrational you have to act. And if you didn't have the experience of all the craziness that comes out with our attempts to resist the fear, resistance comes in many different forms. Everybody has their own way of resisting fear. Some people become very stoic and tight and controlled in order to not deal with fear. It's like we can sometimes spend our whole lives just not dealing with our fear. And it's like we're trying to be the bird we're supposed to be. I'm not supposed to be this fearful creature. I'm supposed to be love and joy. And, you know, I think one of the worst things that ever happened to our relationship with fear is the whole, like, oh, there's only love and joy. You have to choose love, you know, but it's at the expense of fear. And we're trying to clip off the beak of fear and lock it in the basement and abuse it. And, you know, it's those efforts that are actually causing all these problems in our lives. But if we take fear out of the basement and welcome it into our lives as a natural and normal part of the human experience in an honored position, then fear doesn't have to act so crazy. Fear doesn't have to feel so bad, and thus we don't have to feel so bad. Now, how does this translate in practical terms? Because a lot of you talked about snowboarding, skiing. Like, what do we do now that we have this realization? Well, having been a skier, let me tell you how I deal with fear now. I still go to Alaska every year and ski 55-degree slopes. So in that moment, I'm actually consciously choosing to go and have a scary experience. I do it because I enjoy feeling fear. I don't go despite the fear. I go because of the fear. And we're going to kind of get into that fear hack in the fourth webinar, which is going to be 1 week from tonight. So I consciously choose to go up and experience fear on the mountains. And I get up there, it's 55 degrees. Of course, I'm going to be scared. It's going to be terrifying up there. But I kind of like feeling fear. I'm in the mood for fear, and that's why I'm there. And I'm actually paying a lot of money to go and feel fear, right? Because I know that it's going to help me come alive. I know that it's going to take me into these higher altered states that we desire and seek. And I know that it's going to expand who I am. It's like, you know, here's a comfort zone. We go out of our comfort zone. We feel fear. You know, next thing you know, this is your new comfort zone. So fear is a sign that we're on the right path towards expanding who we are as people. So I feel it. You know, it's up there. And I want to go to our equation. So let's say my fear is a level 10. So my discomfort is a level 10, 10 out of 10. Like, oh my gosh, this is terrifying. But because I'm a fear specialist, my resistance is a zero. If you have resistance to fear, it's actually the resistance that makes you feel so bad. It leads to the suffering. So if I have a level 10 of discomfort and a level zero of suffering, or excuse me, of resistance, 10 times zero, I have no suffering. And only the wisdom of fear is available to me. But let's say my level of discomfort is a level 10. And my level of resistance is a level 10. And the resistance for me used to be, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to feel this. You know, there's some sort of fatal flaw. I'm trying to hide this from my friend. I'm trying to act all tough and arrogant and cocky, like I'm not afraid of this, right? like the overcompensation that people have when fear shows up, is all the resistance to it. You know, the resistance is what we're exploring in these webinars, because the resistance ultimately is learned, it's the problem, and it's not necessary. You know, once we learn what to do about fear, which is embrace it. So you're up there, your heart's pounding. Can you find a way to embrace your fear? And the question in those moments are, how would a good father parent? How would a good roommate treat their roommate? How would a good CEO deal with this valuable resource, this employee in your corporation? So those are the questions that you should be asking in order to have the healthiest relationship with fear possible out on the mountain. Any questions? We have just a few minutes left. And here's your homework too. Your homework is to just start noticing your relationship with fear. You know, look at the letter that you wrote to fear. Maybe spend a little bit more time elaborating on that letter. Maybe write a new letter to fear. You know, notice if your pattern is to ignore fear, or if it's to avoid fear or control it or fight it or rationalize it away or try to understand fear. A lot of people go to a therapist to try and understand their fear and just talk and think and talk and think about their fear. You know, ultimately where we're headed is we want to feel our fear. Not be in our heads about our fear, but feel our fear. And we're going to really go into detail on that in the fourth session. So again, the homework is just awareness. Write some more letters to fear. See if you can write a love letter to fear. See how that changes your patterns. Probably one of the best things that you can do around fear is to change your language around how you talk about it. Like, I would never say that, oh, fear is holding me back from doing anything I want to do. I would say something like, my unwillingness to feel fear is what holds me back from doing something I want to do, or my avoidance of fear. That's actually what holds us back, not the fear itself. We have a new question. Can you address fear and flow? Yes. Excellent question. So when we think of flow, I want you to think of water, of course. When we think of flow, we always think of water. And we can use the analogy of a river, or we can use the analogy of a hose. Let's go with hose. So here's the hose, right? I'm a hose. And I have up to 10,000 states of being coming into, through, and out of my hose. These are like 10,000 water droplets. Our game is called Shift, the Game of 10,000 Wisdoms. And so here comes a thought, here comes a belief, here comes an emotion, you know, here comes joy, here comes sadness, here comes love, here comes happiness, oh, here comes frustration, right? They're all supposed to come into, through, and out of our lives very quickly, in between 10 to 90 seconds. That's how fast fear, it's actually been proven by science, it's supposed to come into, through, and out of your life, warning you of danger, kind of making you more alert and focused, and then it's gone, and then something else can enter. But back to our equation, if you resist it, right, here comes an emotion and you wish it weren't so, you take out the clippers, you try to get rid of it, right? You control it, you ignore it, you fight it, right? Hose becomes kinked. You're no longer in flow with your life. Let me give you an example of this. And it seems how there's a lot of skiers and snowboarders on this webinar. This is a great example. I was invited to the first ever big mountain extreme skiing competition in the history of the United States. And they wanted me to come and compete. And I was considered the best in the world, but I didn't want to do that. I made films, seemed really stressful. I didn't want to deal with the fear, right? And I said no. And they agreed, well, okay, we'll pay you to come. We'll pay your expenses. I still said no. And they said, okay, we'll pay you to come. Like, give me a check just to show up. And I said, okay, fine, I go. I'll go, but I had to win. You know, I was the best in the world. It was absolutely mandatory that I win this thing. It was the best of two runs. After the first run, I was not in first place. And I slinked off. I had 2 hours before my next run. And I was in flow during those 2 hours. And I wasn't in flow with love and joy and, you know, some sort of conviction that I can do this. I was in flow with all of the negative children, all the things that we won't look at, all the things that we hate. I felt frustrated. I was scared. I was terrified. I was embarrassed. I felt humiliated. I felt like a fraud. Like, oh my gosh, everybody's about to find out that I'm a complete fraud. I'm not as good as they think I am. Like, all of these things are coming into, through, and out of my life. And we can call the 10,000 voices, the 10,000 wisdoms, the 10,000 motivators. And that's the key. It's like all of these things, including my fear, were motivating me and helping me come alive and kind of perking me up and taking me into these higher states. It's, you know, and then I went to do the second run. I jumped off a 70-foot cliff onto hard packs, stuck the landing. You know, I took fourth overall for the men. I certainly won for the women. I think the second place woman was about 87th out of 120 men. I killed it. And so that's what it looks like to be in flow. And when you're in flow with fear, fear doesn't hold you back at all. It winds up being the very thing that makes you come alive out there. So I just want to finish with one last, let's see if there's any other questions. No, there's no more questions. One last story. A woman gave birth to a baby in a village. And of course it takes a village to raise a baby. And the baby was very healthy. And then one night, right before bed, the baby turned green. And oh my gosh, the villagers were so upset. They didn't know what to do. This is before a doctor. So they ran to the next big city over. And they grabbed the great Zen master. They brought him back and they said, help us save this baby's life. And the Zen master looked at the green baby and said, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to gather the 10 worst thieves and scoundrels from the community together. And we're going to have a ceremony tonight to save this baby's life. And the villagers were like, what? That's crazy. Why wouldn't the Zen master want to gather the most righteous, most honest citizens of our community? Like, it didn't make any sense to them. And they were concerned because a baby's life was at stake, but they also didn't want to question him because he was the great Zen master. So they did it. And they grabbed the 10 worst thieves and scoundrels. And they're like, what are we doing here? Right. And they agreed to it. They sang and chanted all night long. And by the morning, the baby was no longer green. The baby's life was spared. So as the Zen master was leaving the next morning, of course, all the villagers followed him and they finally confronted him and said, how could that have possibly have worked? And keep in mind, the thieves and scoundrels are the things that you won't look at. Your anger, your sadness, certainly your fear. And that's what our webinar is about. Your despair, your embarrassment, your self-loathing, your unworthiness, your powerlessness. Those are your thieves and scoundrels. How did that work? They asked. And he said this. Sometimes the gates to heaven are so tightly locked that it takes a thief to pry the lock. And so what we've just done is we've pried the lock. We've taken fear out of the basement. It's now here as an asset and ally for you to consider. And I hope that you write a love letter and do your own ceremony with fear from now on. So thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me tonight.